Namaste, everyone. My name is Monica Gruber Manjulali from Narayana Ayurveda. So I have coined a new word, dravyology. What is dravyology? It is a study of Ayurvedic herbs, therapeutic minerals and substances. It's a made-up word. I just made it up because everybody says Ayurvedic herbology. I say that too. But basically, it is kind of wrong to call Ayurvedic herbs herbology because our herbs and therapeutic herbal medicines are called dravya. Dravya comes from the root word dru. And Ayurveda uses minerals, rocks, resins, plants, animal products like ghee or honey, etc. in their herbal formulations that are called bhaishajya. And then we harvest it at a certain time and we use mantras and chants to harvest it. We will also use the energy of the sun and the moon and the wind. And we will empower herbs with that energy by chanting and so on. So this particular podcast is actually a class that I did with a couple of Ayurveda counselor students. And this is me talking to them in the next segment. And I'm talking about the difference between Ayurveda and Western herbalist dravyology. In the beginning, I talk about the gunas or the qualities of the herbs and 10 opposing qualities and so on. So here we go. But you should actually basically memorize. So compared to, let's start comparing Ayurveda with the West. We do not use the word herbs, we use the word dravya. And the dravya means that we are using parts of plants, we are using different parts of the plants and the trees, using animal products, we are using minerals, we are using like Shilajit is oozing, we are using resin of trees, we are using even thorns. So there is one particular dravya, it's called Gokshura, and there's another one called Kantakari. Kanta literally means thorn in Hindi. Kanta means like thorny. So that thorn part, you know, in like cactus, when you cook the cactus or Nagafani, you take the thorn out. So these thorns are used, or we also use certain trees like the patras, Himalayan fir or something, you know, trees that grow up in the Himalaya. We actually use the kanta part of it as well. So whole extracts. So we use minerals, we use rocks, animal products, which use ghee is an animal product. Honey is an animal product. What else do we use? We, in the old times, they would also use musk. I use a peacock feather to do a cleansing on the top. Obviously not inside the dravya, but topically it can be used. Then a conch shell is used. Coral is used. Dried coral is used for someone who has very low calcium. Right? Mukta Pishti is used, gemstones are used, Mukta Pishti would be pearls. None of those things are part of your, you are basically going to be focusing on the plants. But once you move into the practitioner, it's a completely different ball game. So, and we want to use the whole herb or whole extract, but not, for example, when we make a grita, we make ghee, we extract the herbs in the ghee. But I don't even, after even extraction, I do not get rid of the herb because it's so expensive, but you're supposed to. Preserving the dravya into formulation to have a long life. So churnams or those powdered herbs we get are basically, I don't want to use the word useless. They are very sensitive and they very easily, by the time, okay, let's see, you went and bought from Amazon some bulk herb, right? The bulk herb, just like coffee or coffee beans, you know, once they roast the coffee beans, it starts losing its efficacy. And that's why powdered coffee that has been in the you know, it smells like cardboard, basically. So if you're buying an herb, which is, powdered, even if it's a curry leaf or whatever, you're buying it and it's already powdered and how long it has been, and you open them, it has no, and then you keep it for another 3 months or 6 months with yourself. It has absolutely no efficacy. It is zero efficacy. Why? The laws dictate that you can say that this is good to go for 1 year or whatever, but actually once something has been harvested and dried, it is like 3 months is the time. Maybe when did they put the stamp? Maybe it was all the herb was with the people who are selling you the bulk herbs already for 2 years before they gave it to you, or already for they, it was already 1 year old before they got it. So it is very important to know where you're getting your herbs from and what is the date of harvest and so on. But if the same herb has been made into a formulation, for example, ghee, Ghrita formulation, Arishta formulation, wine formulation, Kashayam formulation. Now, ghee and wine only gets better with age, right? So you can have something that's 10 years old and it'll retain its efficacy. Of course, on the bottle, it says it has expired because the United States government won't allow you to have a 10-year shelf life. But it has 10-year shelf life, at least. And also the idea is we take the herbs and we create formulation that are easy to store, digest. And for example, pickles or modakas. You know, modakas are these Maharashtrian and South Indian, kind of like a bao bun or what is the word for it? Like a dumpling, a sweet dumpling. Putting herbs in a modaka, that would be a part of the dravya. Confectionery, jams, for instance. You have, you know, what do people do in the fall? They will take all the fruit and they convert it into a jelly or a jam. Or you take your tomatoes and you dry them, make sun-dried tomatoes. Same thing, you have to, better you dry it, better you do, the roots can last years and years. But depending on what type of plant, that's what we're going to study. There's a lot of articles out there between Western herbalist and Ayurvedic practitioner. So if you read the chapter one of your module, I have given all of this. So a Western herbalist basically has knowledge and fundamentals of botany. So I have to, full disclosure here, I was kind of not that much into botany, and then I had a student who was used to be a botanist, and then she was learning herbology from me, and she made me realize this years, many, many years ago. And so because of her, I got into that. And then of course I'm, you know, Atul and I are gardeners. If you know, touching the plants and using the plants and drying the plants and communing with the plants, I've noticed in the last, you know, 12, 13 years that we've been doing the college, people who are gardeners, they make better herbalists. It's as simple as that. There's no, you know, if you're only dealing with dried herbs, then you're a cook, basically. You're a great cook, but it's not an herbalist. An herbalist must be a gardener, and it doesn't have to be a big garden. Just even a windowsill garden is good. But if you really want to get into herbs, then you need to put it out there. I need a garden. I got all my practitioner students doing gardening, gardening and sharing. And because there's a lot of the cooking involved as well. The practitioner is an expert in Ayurveda and knows a little bit of botany. In fact, the morphology of the plant, if you're in India, the leaf, there are certain plants that could be, you need to know by looking at it, because how do you find plants in the ancient India? You go to the forest and you find a plant and you take it, right? But if you don't know what it looks like, you might get a poisonous plant instead. So you need to know your botany, right? At least some of it. Definitely what time things are harvested. So basically, the Western herbalist will kind of also be a scientist. Ayurvedic practitioner is mostly like a little bit of botany, gardening, harvesting, and also deep knowledge of Ayurveda. They will know some pharmacology and they'll know pharmacokinetics. Ayurvedic person will know all about the dravya, dosha, vikrati. They're going to know, they don't need to know this dosha. They don't care that alcohol is heating. They take any herb, whether it's leaves or it's roots or whatever, and they make a tincture out of everything. Some years ago, I had a student, and he was a Western herbalist. So I had a huge amount of herbs. I still have. Shamaji, if you want some herbs, because I moved out of my office. I don't have an office anymore. So I have all these herbs and I'm kind of giving them away because, yes. So I gave him some of my herbs and then he made a tincture out of everything. And I almost cried. I said, why are you making tincture out of everything? Because that's what he knew. You cannot make tincture out of everything. It doesn't work. For some, yes. Especially because a tincture given to a pitta person will actually increase pitta. You cannot give really a tincture. Shamaji, let me know. Also, I have like 7 or 10 kilos of loki, dudi, that I've harvested. I can leave it in my backyard. Yeah, for you. Okay. A Western herbalist actually, they'll kind of open their own apothecary or they will work in companies that make supplements and so on. Ayurvedic practitioner, of course, is going to do Ayurveda. It's everything is about energetics of the plant. And most Western herbalists actually study Ayurvedic herbs as well. So this is very exciting what's happening with the... So some formulation that Ayurvedic herbalist, again, it's not herbalist, again, it's dravyalist, dravyology, but I'm using the word just... It's an oxymoronic word, but I'm just using it just to make it clear. And also when I'd applied to the state of Texas, she couldn't understand Dravya, the person at the state. So I had to use the word herbalist. So when you already know this, you have, you take dry leaves or you take different parts of a plant and you dry it and then you basically powder it. That's called a churnam. Then when you extract the churnam, either with fresh like if you have, anybody has hibiscus or anybody has hibiscus or rose flower or something like that, you take the dried hibiscus or the dried rose, dried water lily. I have so much water lily right now. Dried water lily, yes. So if you take the fresh, if you take the fresh water lily or fresh rose and just put it in cool water for one night, next morning it has become now rose water, right? But you have to use it within one day because bacteria will start in it. So if you put just a pinch of turmeric in it, the bacteria won't take over. And the same dried rose, like so whether you have dried rose, a dried water lily or dried whatever, then you put it in hot, really hot water, like tea. If you think of tea leaves or, you know, the tea that we drink, black tea or whatever tea, now that flavor of the herb is now extracted in hot water. That's called tea and Fanta, not the American tea, guys. Like, you know, you order a tea, they give you like lukewarm water. It is not. So proper tea is the water should almost be boiling. It has been boiled to 200 degrees and it's pretty hot. And then you steep your teas in there. Right, you steep the teas. So in Ayurvedic, you take a little bit of cheesecloth and you put your herbs in a cheesecloth, or you can even buy a ready-made like tea bag and put your herbs in there, and you extract it, and you have boiled the water, you've turned the flame off, you've taken it out, now you put your herbs in there and you let it steep. That is a Fanta. So that's the difference. So the American version of the tea, my God, I lived in England for a long time as well. So you should hear what the British people talk. The kind of words they use for the American so-called tea, you don't want to hear it. It's really funny. You can use a strainer, yeah. But the idea is Yeah, and also like if you go to World Market or something, or even HEB, I don't know, you get this strainer that can dip. It's a metal strainer that can dip. Do not use a plastic strainer. I've seen people use plastic, but either cheesecloth or a metal container, a steel metal container, and you put dip the whole thing in hot water. Not a little bit, all of it. Yeah, that's the one you're talking about. I have that as well. Yeah, Debbie, I've seen the central, that's what I was exactly what I was talking about. Debbie, I have this ash gourd and herbs. If you also want to collect it from me, ash gourd is, I don't know how to get rid of it. I've got my entire sofa is filled with ash gourd. And of course I have herbs too. So if Shama G is coming, you can also come and get it if you have time. I'll send you recipes. Swarasa is literally the juice. Yeah, I've used the natural fiber bags, but they get expensive. What I do is I'll just do either the steel thing or the cheesecloth. Kalka is a paste. It's sometimes, so there's a difference between kalka and lepa. So kalka is made, there is not much difference. A little difference is lepa is a paste that is supposed to be, you know, if you've been, if you've had a facial or a body treatment, you know, that very thin paste that they kind of put it on your body for topical application. And kalka is kind of a paste that you might use in your cooking. For example, mustard paste. Mustard paste is very thick. So lepa is thin. They're both pastes. Has anybody made their own mustard paste, or we make garlic paste in Indian cooking and so on, different pastes of different herbs. Also Hema, like I said, you know, rose water or lavender water or whatever. Decoction is kashayam. It is not as simple, you know, you take 16 or 8 parts of water and you boil it down to one part. For example, you take 16 liters of water and you boil it down to 1 liter of water with like a 1 kilo of ginger. That's a ginger kashayam, the issue. So ginger helped. Kshirapaka. So kashayam, you know, kshirapaka is a mild decoction boiled in milk. So golden milk is what? Is golden milk kshirapaka? Yes, no? Yes, exactly. That is the most famous Western kshirapaka we know. Another kshirapaka would be ashwagandha is great for you, right? How do I give you ashwagandha without getting you pitta up? So the idea is you take ashwagandha and you take a little bit of turmeric and you boil it in milk. Now the ashwagandha turmeric boiled in milk will also take care of the vata, make sure pitta doesn't go up, and all the women support issues. Kshirapak, when you're making for someone, or the formula calls for actual cow's milk when you're making for. So when you say, can I make a golden milk with coconut milk or hemp's milk? That is not kshirapaka as far as Ayurveda is concerned. That is now something else. Don't call it kshirapaka. But of course, for the sake of clarity, we use the word golden milk. And obviously, if somebody cannot digest it, that's a different story. But the formula here, the best formula here is the actual milk. No. The boiled milk, Griffin, you start with the raw milk. Because the milk that you get in the West has already been pasteurized. So when we use the word boil, we mean pasteurized. So the idea is you, because when Ayurveda was written, you went to a cow or you went to and you got the milk from there and you took that raw milk and then you boiled the raw milk yourself. You are not boiling raw milk. That's not boiled milk. Does it make sense? You're probably trying to boil already pasteurized milk. That is already 100 things have happened to it. Yeah. See if you can try this. Yes. So you get raw milk, have the raw milk in your fridge, and then you boil the raw milk along with a little bit of turmeric and your herb. And that's the idea of boiling milk. Because when you boil the milk yourself, I mean, anyone who's Indian here, Anuradha, me, we are like, we get the milk and the first thing, it's in the morning, every household, we boil milk. All of us. because we don't get pasteurized. No, actually, nowadays you do get pasteurized milk, but my mother would have a heart attack if I tell her I use pasteurized milk. You get the raw milk that has come from the cows, and you know, you boil it, and you only boil it for up to 1 minute. So there's different pasteurizations. If you're only boiling it for 1 minute, like it reaches the boiling point, as soon as it reaches the boiling point, you turn it off. So the pasteurization that's happening with that 1 minute boiling is, so the nutrients that are dying off in the boiling is a lot less compared to when you get the milk in this country and then they pasteurize it twice and then they kill all the nutrients in the milk. After killing all the nutrients in the milk, then they add a vitamin D, which is fish basically, vitamin D made of fish, most unless it's kosher milk, on the top of it. And then the cow itself is given horrible diet. That is why a lot of people have become allergic. In India, cows kind of roam free. Do whatever they like, but also like try A2 milk as well, or you could also make shirapak with goat's milk. Shirapak can also be made with goat's milk. If I get someone they say the cow's milk I'm intolerant, I tell them try goat's milk. And why? You shirapak, you're not giving one cup of shirapak to drink, you're giving something like one tablespoon. Does it make sense, Donna? Try goat's milk and only one tablespoon. Don't take too much. Yeah, so you can make with that also. Then thylam is the oil. So if you guys are into it and if you have hibiscus nearby, or hibiscus oil is really, really, Bringaraj hibiscus, a Brahmi is super good for hair. So you basically make a Bringaraj, you basically make a tea and you boil the tea with the oil till all the water evaporates. And that's how we make the thylums. Of course, we are not expecting you to make anything. This is just for information. Better to buy ready-made. Grita, medicated grita, for example, Trifala grita for eyes is given, or Mahatrifala grita or something like that. So Trifala grita doesn't mean it's just Trifala and ghee and that's it. There is like many ingredients to it. And these things, better you buy ready-made, because it can take 16, 18 hours to make these things. And we don't have the time for it. Of course, once you join practitioner, we make you do it once. But that's it, just to know it. Lehyam or avaleha is jam or confectionery. Yes, it's medicated. It's gritas are medicated. Trifala grita, tikta grita, and so on. So chyavanprash is not created equal. I have seen many people, they are taking chyavanprash without any, you know, chyavanprash has heating herbs in it, and some chyavanprash is cooling herbs in it, so they're not created equal. And some people have 5-6 herbs in their chyavanprash and they're calling it chyavanprash. Please don't call it chyavanprash. So if you don't know, you look at certain herbs and you say, what, 6 things and they're calling, or they're 4 things. I've seen like 4 things in Mahanarayana Telam and they're calling it Mahanarayana. They should call it, you know, kapha pacifying thylam or something like that. So these are some examples. Trifala churna is a powder. Trikatu churna is a powder. Ginger kashayam, turmeric, garlic, swarasa. For example, take a little bit of fresh turmeric and fresh garlic and put it in a press or in a cheesecloth, and you press it and some drops of garlic and turmeric root come out. And those drops are the dosage. The juice here is not like one pint of, you know how people drink pints and pints and gallons here of juice? No, it's a couple of drops. The neem aloe kalka, for example, you said you had the, yes, it is a raw herb juice, yes. And it can be, and the neem, for example, Francisca, you had some inflammation. So a coconut or aloe would have been a nice thing as a paste for it. Then of course, yogurt, garbanzo bean, turmeric, lepa for, you know, beauty, nice, beautiful face. gardenia, lavender, hima is the rose water or lavender water, gardenia water, you know, you just spray on the face, or, you know, just underarms, just to freshen yourself up. So these are just some of the things that we do with Ayurveda. So, a solvent is a thing that, if you remember your chemistry, solvent is the thing. Hang on, what happened to my chat? Here we go. So, when you take a little bit of salt and the salt dissolves in water, that is a solvent. So, you have in the Western world, they, for example, do you know all the vinegar based, for example, people cannot stop talking about apple cider vinegar. Oh my God, apple cider vinegar is great. And it is good. It is really good for Vata person. Imagine giving apple cider vinegar or vinegar based side dressings to a Pitta person. That is like a explosion. It's like a volcano explosion of Pitta. You do not give vinegar based things to a Pitta person. Even all the pickles in the West are made of vinegars. We don't do that. Our solvent is an anupana. A glass of water can also be anupana. It can be, if you take warm water, that's an anupana. If you take boiled water and you take the herb and you boil it with water and water reduces, it's called a decoction. If you steep the herb in hot water, it's a tea or a fanta. If you put your herbs in cold water and leave it all night, the next morning it is an infusion. So water is definitely used in Ayurveda. And some of the other anupanas, of course, we're using is honey, oil, alcohol, and milk. For example, sesame oil. Right now, we are not going to talk about all of that. We are only interested in the water, honey, and ghee, basically, and milk, maybe. Anupanas are vehicles that increase the efficacy of the herb, make it tasty, palatable, and help deliver the herb deeply into the dhatus. You already know this. So, water, we have done hot water, milk, honey, ghee, aloe, especially if you want the herb delivered to the pitta is very, very high in a person. So, or there's a digestive problem. Pomegranate juice if they have atisara or diarrhea. I have given orange juice to Vata people, as an anupana. And I give also orange juice is a great anupana if somebody is low, if you're giving them iron, for example, Loha Bhasma and Trifala, because you need vitamin C for iron to be absorbed, right? So orange juice is vitamin C. So I've done that. All right. So some different parts of the plants that are used. Now we're just going to talk about plants. We use the roots, we use the seeds, we use the leaves, flower, resin, and bark. So some example of roots are, we use ginger root, turmeric root, ashwagandha root. How many of you used fresh turmeric? Why do we need to know that ginger, turmeric, and ashwagandha is a root? Oh, good, good. I'm glad. Why is it important for us to know that ashwagandha, turmeric, and ginger is a root? Why do you think this is important for us to know? Any ideas besides Deborah? Why is it important for us to know? Yes, Anuradha. We need to know the shelf life. Definitely, the effect is different. So, if you have ashwagandha root powder, and roots have the longest shelf life, right? If it is in your pantry, the ashwagandha root powder for 1 year, you know it's not going to go bad, even in a powder form. If you have turmeric root and it's in your kitchen, or ginger root powder in your kitchen for 1 year or something, or you made a fresh powder, you have it, you know it's not, as long as it's in an airtight container, it has a long shelf life, right? No, even if you buy a freshly extracted, or you just buy the, and if you have the root in actual root forms, it's the dried roots, dried ginger root, or dried turmeric root, or dried ashwagandha root, you can have it up to 1.5, 2 years, as long as it's in an airtight container and not exposed. So this is very important. So you know these things can, that, for example, there is an Ayurveda formula called Dashamula or 10 roots. I always tell people buy the in bulk it is sold either as a powder or the 10 roots dried. And even in Chinese medicine, the roots are sold as roots. It'll stay in your pantry for a long time, unless you have like clients lined up in front of you. So that's one way. Also, the way you need to know the roots, because the way we will, in order to extract the ginger, or extract the turmeric, or extract the ashwagandha, we cannot extract it with water. You have to mix it with, like, you either have to boil it or you have to mostly boil it basically. In order to extract, you have to boil it. You cannot make ginger tea. You cannot put ginger, turmeric, ashwagandha in hot water and, you know, this is anupana. It's not going to work. It's a root. You need to either boil it in milk or boil it in water or something like that to get the best effect. It's not like with the water, it's not going to work. Like turmeric is best given with hot milk. Ashwagandha is best given with hot milk. And ginger is best given with hot water or boiled water. Does it make sense? That's why we need to know what part of the plant it is. Stem is shatavari. So shatavari is Indian asparagus. And how do you cook asparagus when you get it? Do you just take the stem and you just start chomping on it? What do you do? Anybody cooks asparagus here? You chomp on it? So faith is like, I chop it. So you steam it or you roast it or you saute it. Similarly, shatavari is a root powder. So a stem is obviously, it has, it doesn't have as long a shelf life as a ginger or a turmeric, but it does, because it's a stem, it does have a better shelf life, almost up to, you know, 7-8 months. So you can keep the shatavari in a powdered form for easily 6 months or so. But you know, we still need to cook it a little bit raw. So we give shatavari again with hot milk to increase the brahmana effect, or we give it with hot water and things like that. Yeah. Now, very quick question. Would you boil any of these flowers, or what would you do with these flowers? Steam them, boil them, cook them. What will you do? You never, ever, ever boil flowers because their shelf life is days. You dry them, soak them, make a tea out of them. That's it. You never boil them. Similarly, cardamom, you never boil cardamom. Whenever you're talking about flowers, so you have dried flowers. So I'm sure pretty, you know, if you have a rose or calendula, like you get every year in the spring comes, they start selling the annual. Calendula is, are baba, genda. Shyamaji, genda, you know? How much genda is sold here? So, you know, you can eat genda or marigold. It's also called marigold. Same family, marigold, calendula, genda. We offer it to like gods, you know, in our rituals. So hibiscus is offered to Shiva, plumeria, rose is offered to all kind of gods and goddesses. So take your genda and you dry it and make a tea out of it. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Exactly. And you can make an oil out of it. It's really good for skin also. But can you boil it? No. You don't boil herbs. You can infuse it, just the what part of the flower is just the rose petals or hibiscus petals, not the stamen part. Like hibiscus, you need to take the stamen out, the green part out, just the, yes. So you make the tea and then you use the tea in whatever formulation. Or you can make a hema out of it, like infused water, but you never boil them or you dry them and, you know, use it. For example, the what is the green tea the Chinese have with gardenia? Is it jasmine green tea? Anybody has had the jasmine tea? How beautiful. If you have a really good quality jasmine tea, all you do is smell the jasmine, right? So if once it's dried, as soon as you dry it and you know, it's in a airtight container, then once you open it, all that aroma will come out. Yes, exactly. So you do a hot, all you did that is put it in hot water. All the entire jasmine can be used, but with rose petals, hibiscus, you have to take the green part out. You have to remove the top part. Plumeria, all of it, calendula, only the petals. Cloves, like somebody said, if you have a pain somewhere on the skin or gums, so making a paste of the cloves and putting it where the pain is, it helps in pain relief. So you basically make like a lepa out of it, or you can extract oil as well if you know how to. So buds are used, but anything which has an aroma smell, the shelf life once it has been extracted is zero. But in seed form, it will stay for a long time. Buds have a good shelf life. Leaves have the least, their shelf life is in days, 2 day, 5 day, 6 day, 7 day. Once you dry them, maybe 1 month. 1 month, 2 months. So the shelf life of leaves is very low. If you fresh leaves, 2 days, 3 days maximum. Yeah, but how do you increase the shelf life? You dry them, and after you've dried them, you put them in an airtight container, you maybe 2 months or, you know, but you know, I've seen people, they have curry powder in their kitchen for like 6 years, 10 months. I'm like, what is this? Fresh leaves immediately, as soon as you use them, that's it. They're done. What do you do with leaves? You can make tea out of them. We can do the churnam. It is dead. It's a dead curry powder. It's a dead body. I've seen people, especially a lot of Westerners, their pantry has no smell. How can your spice pantry, have you seen an Indian person's spice pantry? You cannot enter their house. The whole house is filled with spices. Their clothes are filled with spices. Everything is spiced up. And if you go to a Western person's house, not everybody, obviously, and then you open their pantry, it has no smell. It is smellless because they're very sensitive. A lot of Westerners are sensitive to smells. If I don't have a strong smell of food, then I feel like I'm cooking nothing. Oh, really? Exactly, exactly. Oh, today they are making sambar. Yeah, exactly. So leaves and flowers have the smallest shelf life, basically. But again, if you dry them and you put them in airtight containers, then you can increase the shelf life a lot. Bark also has anybody used cinnamon powder versus cinnamon bark? So Arjuna is bark, Ashoka is bark, cinnamon is bark. So yeah, and how fragrant is it? Also now that you get cassia, which is not exactly the same as cinnamon, but it's in the same family. But actual cinnamon, sometimes you get the cinnamon powder in Costco, and it's really good quality, really good quality. But once you've opened it, the airtight is gone, you have to use it up quickly. But if you have it in, if you have it in the bark form, then of course you're increasing the shelf life. I'm coming to that, Arjun, almost there. Wait, you've already talked about seeds when we did the churnam. Better to have seeds in the seed form. Now, what is the anatomy of a seed? Does anybody know what is the anatomy of a seed?